What I want to talk about today, though, is a little bit different. Recently, the American College of Cardiology and the American Heart Association came out with chest pain guidelines, which portions of it greatly impact emergency medicine. I have a couple slides at the end that are more about office-based practice, so I may just mention those tangentially. But I wanted to cover what this paper goes over. This is easily Google searchable on Google or in circulation. There's a slide set that I've drawn some slides from, but also a paper that is worth reading, at least the emergency medicine part of it, that you should be very familiar with it. What the goal is to recognize, you know, we see so many patients with chest pain. The goal is to recognize which patients need to be admitted for further evaluation, who aren't, you know, obviously aren't the STEMIs or NSTEMIs, and who can be discharged for expectant follow-up. And I'll go over some strategies to try to get as many people home who are stable to go home as possible and really not miss the cases that need to come in. This is AHA guidelines. It goes from, it's color-coded, green or class one, goes from class of recommendation and level of evidence. And you'll see this whenever I come to an algorithm. A new thing in the guidelines this time is to try to risk stratify based on the history of what type of pain this is. And it goes from high to low. I'm oftentimes relieved if I talk to a patient, they say, yes, doctor, I've had chest pain. How long does it last? Oh, about 3 seconds. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Or they say it's pleuritic. I don't know what to do with that as much, but duration is certainly key. And, you know, if they get more classic and central pressure, squeezing, gripping, heaviness, tightness, then you start thinking myocardial ischemia. So this is more of a schematic to think about the risk. But what's sort of embedded in this is even people with the sort of more, right-sided, tearing, ripping, burning type pain, they still could have some risk of ischemia. It's not zero. It's just lower than on the extreme left side. And, you know, chest pain could be a level 5 chart, right, if you hit all these elements. And I think chest pain evaluation is well-deserving of that. But these are the characteristics that you really want to try to nail down when talking to the patient to do that risk stratification. And the differential diagnosis is extensive. You know, chest pain is one of the more common things we evaluate in the ED. The vanishing minority of patients actually have ACS. It's about under 5% usually. So most of the patients we see have something else going on with them. First thing we do, it looks like chest pain followed by history and physical, I wish, is all I could say, is that's not what happens in my practice, nor in any of yours, I imagine. I imagine you see the ECG and say, I better go see this patient. Based on what the cardiogram shows, most are don't show much. Most are non-diagnostic. Some may show some non-specific changes, which could be an NSTEMI, and then what we're really looking for is the obvious STEMI, which it jumps out at you like crazy. But there are the choices. You could have diffuse changes, ST depressions, non-diagnostic, or new arrhythmias. So some of the general considerations in testing. This pyramid has office practice on the audience's right, and emergency practice on the left. And the way you know that is asymptomatic isn't even in our practice. You know, what would that be? A patient comes in asymptomatic. I don't know what that even means. But the point is, low-risk patients you can discharge without provocative testing. And what they mean by no testing is not skip the troponin. It means you don't have to do a stress test. You don't have to do a coronary CT angio. And then the risk stratifies all the way up to ACS. So I tend to think of these patients as, you know, okay, ACS, we have that. It could be either STEMI or NSTEMI. But then there's high-risk patients, intermediate, and low-risk. And I'll talk at some length about how to risk stratify those groups. Not sure if this slide could be read, but basically, the right diagnostic test is either going to be a coronary CT angio or some sort of stress imaging that you refer the patient to. Some of the it really depends on the expertise of your centers and what your general practice is, and you know better than I what works best at your place. There are some investigators who believe that if you have a younger patient, the CT is better. because there's less obstruction, more calcium will be picked up that way, and the stress testing is better in over 65. But again, either test is a good option. And then the different types of stress tests are listed there. Some centers favor stress echoes, probably the second most common behind the treadmill test. So choosing the right pathway. Patient comes in with acute chest pain. If it's not acute, then you want to evaluate for stable chest pain. This would be a person who came in and said, I was having chest pain when I woke up this morning. It's now gone. Very common scenario. So that's the evaluate for stable chest pain. I'll have the algorithm for that in a moment. It's basically no different than if they're, you know, if they're actively having chest pain, then you really want to get on that case right away. So here again, the history and physical should actually be after the ECG. If there's a cardiac cause, is it a STEMI? Is it not a STEMI? Is it some of the disorders listed at the bottom? So basically the breakpoint is STEMI and STEMI, or then risk stratify the patient according to high risk, intermediate risk, and low risk. Here again, the patient has an obvious non-cardiac cause. That would be someone, my favorite case would be to examine the patient's chest wall and see a characteristic shingles rash. You know, that's happened a couple times, and that's okay, great, we got it. Or get an x-ray and they have a small pneumothorax. You know, that's the kind of non-cardiac stuff where they require no further cardiac testing. If there's an obvious non-ischemic cardiac cause, that would be something like pericarditis or valvular heart disease. Other testing would be as needed, and if it's possible, ACS, here's where your clinical decision rules. This is probably the most important line on the algorithm. You want to get a troponin. You want to use the highly sensitive troponins. That really changes, you heard about that this morning, but that really changes how you can approach the patient and the degree of comfort you would have in saying they do not have a troponin leak or ACS. And then you want to use one of the clinical decision algorithms to risk stratify. If the person comes in at low risk and has a negative, highly sensitive troponin, and you can get a second one at either 1, 2, or 3 hours, there's literature to support any of those intervals, and they're low risk, there's no further testing required. So in other words, they don't need the stress test or CT and can be safely discharged. Intermediate risk would be the ones whose troponin are negative and they have a bunch of risk factors or age. And for those patients, you may want to, if you have an observation unit, to use that. Or those are patients that need more emergent referral or admission for provocative testing, depending on what the case is. Certainly, if they're having active chest pain, I would favor inpatient management. And then high risk, they need to have invasive coronary angiography. And just a note on some of these risks, the algorithms when they first came out used the conventional troponins and assigned 1 or 2 points. If you think of the heart score, there's 1 point for troponins that are 1 to 3 times upper limit of normal, and then 2 points for 3 times upper limit of normal. With the high sensitivity troponins, any elevation in troponin immediately puts them into high risk. It's a little bit different. Sort of, you don't really have to consider the other elements in the clinical pathway if their highly sensitive troponin is at all elevated. So these are some of the clinical pathways. I'll put a plug in for MDCalc. I think we all use them. Anybody use it more than 10 times a shift? or search for weird calculations that you can find. Well, these are some of the more common risk stratification pathways for cardiac. I usually use heart just as a matter of preference, but the others have been shown to be helpful. Whichever one you use, you want to have one that incorporates, again, the highly sensitive troponin into the algorithm. And if you go to heart, there's going to be 2 heart scores. One gives low, intermediate, or high risk, and that's to risk stratify the patient according to risk of coronary artery disease. The second one is a rapid means of screening people for early discharge, and that's the one in the smaller print. It's a pathway for early discharge. For that one, 0 to 3 points is low risk, and you can safely discharge the patient. Anything higher than that is high risk. and the patient cannot be safely discharged. And they're the ones that need some sort of a provocative testing or CT. Did you know that testing comes with a warranty? So the patients, if they've had an angiogram on coronary CT with no stenosis or plaque, there's a 2-year warranty. So they can come in, have all the chest pain they want, and as long as their troponin doesn't bump, they can be safely discharged without additional testing. But it has to have been cleanly normal. Stress test has a 1-year warranty period. And that also has to have been adequate. It has to have been the right heart rate and, proper, exercise and, just everything has to have been done correctly. And these are just some of the definitions used for low risk. And these had to do with the troponin. Low risk is T0 or 1 or 2 hour delta. Both are negative. And some people favor a 3-hour. Just as a show of hands, how many use 3-hour? Or who uses highly sensitive troponins? Everybody? Most? How about 3 hours? 2? How about 1? How about 0? There's support for 0, too, but I haven't gotten there yet in my own practice. I still get probably 2-hour just to split the difference. Intermediate risk is a little bit different. For this one, what you want to know in the group that I just alluded to is on the far left, recent negative test. The patient has intermediate risk and is within their warranty period, they could be discharged. And instead of reading the rest of the slide, what you want to know is everything else from that point over requires some sort of additional testing. So that the person, if they had a prior abnormal test, that's on the left side. If they had a prior normal test, but it's been more than a year or two, depending on the type of test, it has to be repeated. And of course, if they've had never had prior testing, then they have to have testing now. And that's the group that's all the way to the right here. I pulled this slide out because this is a new concept, and it's something that we probably do in our practice more and more. It's, I think, a refreshing change in how we practice medicine, where we develop goals of care with patients and their families, but also share decision-making with patients. A lot of these chest pain cases are sort of in the gray zone about what the next steps are going to be, and this is where an informed patient can be told the risks, benefits, for different testing options and different treatment strategies. Again, the differential diagnosis is extensive, and I put this up not as a list that you need to drill into your brain because it's already there, but just that this is an extensive differential diagnosis, of which the vanishing minority of patients actually have some form of acute coronary syndrome. Patients with stable chest pain, this is the part I mentioned earlier that really talks about the office-based management for patients. I like this slide because it really lists the pretest probability of obstructive coronary artery disease based on age, gender, and symptoms. And if you look at the age, certainly 30 to 39 is pretty low risk. Chest pain is about less than 5% in men and women respectively. Dyspnea is 0% in men, 3% in women, and then this goes up with age, so that when you get over 70, about half of the patients male patients with chest pain likely have some form of coronary artery disease. And then the graphs over here show age, gender, and symptoms. Here's an interesting group, stable chest pain with no known coronary artery disease. This is where you want to do a clinical risk assessment, and if they're low risk, no testing is recommended. There may be some selected cases where you want to do coronary CT or exercise ECG. But the point is, if a patient comes in de novo, stable chest pain, that is, it's not persistent, it's resolved, and troponin is negative, the low-risk patients can be safely discharged. Intermediate or high risk, you have a choice, again, between CT angio and stress testing. And then if all those are positive, they wind up getting angiography. This is a stable patient with known CAD. And it's either going to be non-obstructive or obstructive. What's interesting here is if they have an obstructive lesion, you want to intensify goal-directed medical therapy with the option to deferred testing. So this is where if it's stable chest pain, known coronary disease, and they're now pain-free, this is where I'd involve consultants to see what the best next step of, you know, next course of action would be. If they're not obstructive, again, intensification of preventive strategies and options to defer testing. But again, if these symptoms are persistent, and this is more office-based practice, because I don't think you're going to be treating patients. If they have persistent symptoms, they're going to be admitted. You know, it's not one where they have intermittent chest pain with exertion over months. This is more office-based practice. And this is also, I mentioned this just because you want to start thinking about, is this, you know, you want to think about what the person's prior history was, what kind of previous imaging they've had, whether there's evidence of coronary artery disease or not, and just to begin thinking of that sort of approach beyond the, you know, STEMI, NSTEMI, and risk stratification. So there's 10 take-home messages I wanted to close with. The first one is chest pain means more than pain in the chest. It could be described in any number of ways that we showed on one of the first slides there. It could be discomfort in the chest, shoulders, arms, back. It could be, you know, anything. We've all seen in our practices that it's much more than just chest pain. It could also be shortness of breath and fatigue. One thing that these guidelines wanted to get away from was the use of the term atypical chest pain. That sort of snuck into the electronic health record as a choice. Its original intent was for patients who had angina who came in with atypical, like back pain or some atypical presentation of angina. It did not mean to include non-cardiac causes. So what we tend to, the best way to think about this, my recommendation would be, think of it as either cardiac, non-cardiac, or other in terms of the chest pain etiology. That atypicals really become sort of a trash bin of we don't know what etiology of the pain is. Its original intent was very different, though. Troponins we talked about, you want to use the high sensitivity cardiac troponins just because they are highly sensitive, and if you get two, they're negative with a negative delta. Patients automatically fall into low risk unless they're over 65, have two risk factors, you know, prior coronary artery disease, et cetera. Early care for acute symptoms. Patients with acute chest pain should seek medical care immediately. This is more for the patients. Evaluation should focus on early identification and exclusion of life-threatening causes. This is sort of what we do. It's a pretty obvious statement. Shared decision-making. Patients who are clinically stable should receive information about risk of adverse events, radiation exposure, costs, alternative options, and should be provided that to facilitate discussions so that they take part in their own care. I find that even patients who we discharge who are at low risk for having ACS benefit from shared decision making. You just lay out all the data that, you know, you came in with chest pain. Certainly if it returns, you return. But this is why we think it's not cardiac today, because you had a non-diagnostic ECG, and we did the blood testing for troponins, and they were normal. Testing not needed routinely for low-risk patients. I wish that a different term were used, because I immediately think of troponins and say, hey, wait a minute, why would you not do that? What's meant here is the CT or stress testing or some other advanced imaging or advanced testing. It's either provocative testing or advanced imaging, I guess, would be the better term. For patients with acute or stable chest pain determined to be at low risk, urgent diagnostic testing is not needed. We talked about pathways. These are absolutely essential that you use them, although it's become a little bit less clear how to, you know, I think it's become more clear that the high sensitivity troponin trumps all, that even, you know, someone has, you know, has no points and they have a high troponin, that's there's a reason for that. There, even if it's not an ischemic cause of myocardial troponin leak, there is something that is happening that needs to be looked into further. Accompanying symptoms, chest pain is the most dominant, most frequent symptom for men and women diagnosed with ACS. Women may be more likely to present with accompanying symptoms such as nausea and shortness of breath. And notice it says accompanying symptoms, that's in addition to chest pain. You want to identify patients most likely to benefit from further testing. These are the ones who are at intermediate risk or intermediate to high risk of obstructive coronary artery disease would benefit the most from, and there's the right term, cardiac imaging and testing. And here's, I already talked about this, non-cardiac is the preferred term. And the structured risk assessment should be used for patients presenting with acute or stable chest pain. Risk for coronary artery disease and adverse events should be estimated using evidence-based diagnostic protocols. And those 10 points are summarized on this slide. And I put all this information into the PDF that should be on the website, along with a bunch of other stuff. Okay, I'll left a couple minutes for questions if folks want to, if folks have any. Yes, sir. Can I be honest with you? I'm absolutely the wrong person to ask that, because we don't have an observation unit. We tend to not get cardiac CTs in the in our ED, but cardiology has them available. We usually will admit the patient to observation status to the cardiology service. Is that something you use or?
We do use it, and there's some debate on what's the significant number or not.
Mm-hmm. How many get that, 24 hours a day as a decision-making instrument? Because, we've talked to cardiology about it, but it extends the ED length of stay so long. It's something I'd like to work towards. Once we get our staffing back online, we have an observation unit that we could very well do that. But, if there's vagary, I'd probably err on the side of caution, I guess, as to what score. In the back, yes, sir.
Yeah, I would say in regards to the warranty period, like you mentioned, I just read the test pain guidelines prior to that on the script. It was almost a little frustrating how, I guess, the NHA worded it on page 29 when they talked about patients with prior cardiac tests and also being worried about that. And basically, the wording that they used was
modular document, so they're planning they could take a section of it and change that section and substitute it out on the web as opposed to having to have a full commission and sit and do this again every 3 years. But I think it's clearly imperfect in its current state.
Well put.
Yeah, I'd like to comment on warranties. You know, as with warranties in general, some are void. And you know, if you have a suspicion that the patient's having ACS, then I think that would overrule. But you're right; it's a difficult diagnosis to have absolutes for. You know, and that's why I suggest at the very beginning to go into a lot of detail with the history and the the physical, and really think keep an open mind in approaching these patients. But I would say that is not an absolute. If you see the patient, they had a negative normal CT angio 18 months ago, and you're still thinking you're thinking ischemia, then by all means, do what's right for the patient. Yes? That's in another place. This is just the evaluation of chest pain. I'm not sure. I have to look to see where to refer you. There is a nice way of thinking about that. There's ischemic causes of myocardial damage, but then there's non-ischemic, and they can be broken down into. And this is neither type 1 nor type 2, but it can be broken down into acute or chronic. An example there would be the dialysis patients who are constantly leaking low levels of troponin. So it's interesting, the type 2 STEMIs are, the mortality rate's actually as high or higher than type 1. You know, type 1, of course, is due to a lesion in the coronaries, and type 2 is due to low flow. But the patients are actually at higher risk of death with type 2. But that's beyond the scope of this in terms of differentiating treatment. Yeah, in the guidelines, there's a list of all the relevant other guidelines, and there's probably a list of about 12 or 14. And there's so much information out there. A real effort was made not to overlap them, as you say.
Awesome. Thanks again.
My pleasure. Thanks, everyone.